Call this meeting to order the Newport Planning Commission. First order of business is roll call. Jim Patrick here. Bill Brannigan.
Here.
Bob Berman.
Here.
Jim Hasselman is absent. Gary East.
Here.
Braulio Escobar.
Here.
John Updike.
Here.
All right, first up is approval of the regular session meeting minutes of 10/24/2022.
Having read the Planning Commission minutes, there were a few very, very minor changes that have been submitted, so I would recommend that we approve them.
I'll second it.
Any discussion or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Okay, public hearing. I have two public hearings on the agenda tonight, but I have to read this statement. And we do have Zoom, right? Somebody on Zoom? So I'm doing the Zoom version.
Yes.
This public hearing is being conducted utilizing the Zoom video conference platform. Before we get started, I'd like for staff a moment to identify individuals who are participating virtually. And we do have one, right? People on Zoom.
We have two people on Zoom.
Okay. I'd like to cover a few ground rules. Individuals wishing to speak may raise their hand proper or use the raise hand feature. It can be found by clicking on the participant's bottom at the bottom of the computer screen, the raise hand button on the bottom of the smartphone, or by dialing 9 on the landline. I will call out the order of testimony in cases where multiple hands are raised. Please keep your microphone muted unless you're speaking. Press 6 to mute and unmute a landline. For persons participating by video or phone, the city can make shared screen feature available for those who wish to make a presentation. Information shared with the Planning Commission in this manner is part of the record, and a copy of the materials needed provided to staff. For those persons who are elected to attend the hearing in person, computer has been set up so they may provide testimony using the video conference platform. For land use public hearings, I have to read this statement. This statement applies to all to quasi-judicial and legislative land use hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented towards the request being heard must be directed towards the applicable criteria in the Newport Comprehensive Plan, the Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes to apply to the decision. Failure by of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. An issue that may be a basis for appeal to LUBA may be not raised not later than the close of record at or following this evidentiary hearing. Such issues may be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city's decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. Failure by the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request the opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will continue to date certain and a schedule set for submittal of additional testimony, a period for parties to respond to the new testimony, and a period by which the applicant can provide a following argument. At this time, we'll ask Planning Commissioner disclosing the actual potential conflict interests, a bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits for either of the two.
Simply visiting the site.
Which one?
Both that are on today's agenda. Blockhouse as well.
Oh, the blockhouse, okay.
Right.
Yeah, I visited the blockhouse.
Anyone else?
I have no conflict.
Okay. Anyone present has an objection to the participation of any Planning Commission member or the Commission as a whole? Please raise that objection now. Okay. First one is file number 2-CUP22-8, appeal of denial to allow a real estate office in the C2 zone district. Staff report.
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. I'll be brief. I put together just a two-page memo that was included in your packet. You have a copy of the original staff decision with all the approval criteria. I do have the entire file here also tonight. As you noted, this first hearing tonight is a hearing, it's an appeal of a staff decision which denied a conditional use permit application for a real estate office in Nye Beach. The property at issue is located at 316 Northwest Coast Street. The space is about 984 square feet in size. There are some photographs of it that were included in the packet. The applicant in this case, Ty Hildebrands with K&B Investments, and the real estate office here would be for Realty One at the beach. The city of Newport conditional use criteria are listed in what we call Newport Municipal Code, our zoning code chapter of our municipal code, which is chapter 14. 14.34050. I'm not going to read them all because there's only one that's pertinent to this appeal and that was pertinent to the denial and is likely to be the principal point of discussion tonight, although anybody may speak to any criteria they believe are relevant. But the one that's at issue would be the one that requires the applicant comply with any special requirements of the underlying zone or overlay zone, which includes the intent of the underlying zoning in this case, which is a C2, or we call it tourist commercial zone. Now, in the past, pre-2011, the city of Newport used the standard industrial classification approach to what is or isn't allowed in a zoning district. So, in other words, we did our level best to list every single possible potential use that would be permitted, either outright or conditionally, or not permitted. And that was a long, lengthy, and cumbersome way of structuring a zoning code. And so in 2011, like many jurisdictions, we went to a use category approach where we didn't try to define every type of use that was permissible, but rather we put them into their kind of categories that explain the nature of that type of use. So one such category, what we call personal service-oriented uses, and that's where real estate offices fall, as do branch banks, laundromats, photo studios, financial services, and a range of other uses, which I've listed in the memo. It's a full paragraph. I'll not go through them all. In 2011, when the Planning Commission chose to go down this path, it elected to make personal service-oriented uses in tourist commercial-zoned areas conditional. It did so because it recognized that we have a finite amount of land available in these tourist commercial zones, such as Nye Beach, and that we needed to preserve that space for retail uses that are oriented to tourism, because that's what makes these areas vibrant and attractive in many respects. And a number of these personal service-oriented uses could just as easily and effectively locate elsewhere. In our C1 zones, for example, which we have quite a bit of along US 101, 20 city center area, things of that nature. So with Realty One Group at the beach, they've been operating out of an office off Lee Street in the city center area since 2019. They identified this location down in Nye Beach as a location that they would like to locate to, and that's what led to this application. And unfortunately, at the staff level, we couldn't find that the standard had been met, and it's because in no small part, you know, this is a real estate office that has been operating effectively outside of the Nye Beach area, outside of a tourist commercial area since 2019. While it's convenient and desirable for them to be in Nye Beach, more foot traffic, things of that nature, there's not a business need for them to be there. There's not something there in Nye Beach that is inherent to their business model, and their business model wouldn't succeed if not for the fact, you know, if they're not in that Nye Beach area. And that's the tact we took, recognizing the standards that the bar that was set in this area when that change was made in 2011. Now in 2011, you had one existing real estate office down there already. So that was grandfathered at the time that the change was made in 2011. So that real estate office is still down there. And then in 2018, you had another real estate office. Those are the only two that really are down there in the C2 zone at this point. And that's Seashore Realty, and they were staff approved that down in Nye Beach under the same kind of set of parameters. As I noted in the memo, there are a couple of principal differences here. One, that real estate office, there was no other Seashore Realty office. This was an one broker who had been working out of his home, who at the time in 2018 identified, you know, kind of a market niche for how he wanted to tailor his business that was really principally oriented towards tourists. And therefore, how, you know, that's how that fit in that circumstance. It's probably worth noting, though I didn't put in the memo, but I think we all recognize too that I think at that time, that was 2018, before we put some pretty strict caps on short-term rentals. So in 2018, there was actually a fairly brisk market in people buying up properties in that area for short-term rental purposes. That's changed a little bit. So can't always peg what those dynamics will be, but I think that's a relevant factor out there for your consideration. Now, the applicant in this case has indicated that, hey, look, you know, we're prepared to offer events and have a portion of our office space dedicated to a art gallery. And that's enough to meet the test. Now, from our perspective, you know, we felt that was those were more ancillary type activities and uses and weren't principal or inherent to the business model. Certainly, as a planning commission, you're free to interpret this as you feel is appropriate. I'm just kind of outlining where staff landed on it. It's your job tonight on this appeal hearing to take testimony from the appellant and from those in the audience and decide, did we get it right? Or if not, what that bar should be in deciding this appeal. Let me see if there's anything else I really wanted to cover tonight. That's most of it. I did want to note that you did receive an additional an email from Lucinda Chapman. And she operates the Realty business that was grandfathered. And her note was in favor of the staff decision. And then you also received some supplemental testimony from the applicant's attorney, further articulating their reasons why they believe the conditional use permit should be approved. I think that more or less covers it in terms of what I was hoping to address tonight. I think as appeals go, this is a fairly targeted issue, and I think in many respects a straightforward one, but it is a matter of interpretation. And where you land on this will help guide us in terms of these staff-level decisions moving forward. So, do you have any questions of staff?
Any questions for Derek? All right. Applicant's testimony?
So Zachary DeBlow is raising his hands.
Okay, yeah, and let him.
Good evening, folks, and my apologies that my health did not allow me to travel to you directly to present in person, but I appreciate your courtesy in allowing the video connection, and I'll try to be brief and targeted as staff was on this issue before you. The nature of the appeal here is, I think, well outlined in the comparison of the approval of the Seashore Realty application compared to the current applicant's application in that staff, in approving on this same factor of whether or not the intent of the C2 zone district is serviced by the business plan, drew a direct connection to the idea that realty services are part and parcel to tourist services. And, you know, that is highlighted on pages 26 and 27 of the 43-page attachments to the staff report. And you can see that pretty clearly that it says that considering the applicant's business plan focused on the sales of homes to tourists, catering to pedestrians as a way of drawing in potential clients, it's understandable that the real estate business would need to locate in a tourist commercial area. This is precisely what the applicant tried to lay out in their original materials, and that's laid forth on pages 7 and 9 of the 43-page attachments packet to staff, where the letter from the owner of the applicant, Ty Hildebrand, says that, you know, they want to have their office open to tourists so they can help them find their dream beach home. The idea that the business offerings of Realty One at the beach would be broader and that would somehow serve to not have it satisfy the goals of the zone district, I don't follow the logic there. There's nothing about it that says that it solely has to service that. And I would say that the added activities and entertainment component that I've given to you exhibits is an ongoing model of Realty One in all of its locations, shows that this was a uniform decision on there's an outline of Mr. Hildebrand's desire to locate Nye Beach specifically to target service tourist market. They've essentially laid out a similar business plan with more people to service those tourists as seashore. There's no differentiation just because there's more services offered beyond that. And in addition, I noted on a Google search this morning that Seashore is not going to be open on Sundays, and I don't know how long that's the case or not, but this business plan is specifically looking to service tourists by being open 7 days a week, knowing that tourists vary in their scheduling. Long-term tourists are often in there 7 days a week. That's not particularly germane, but the folks that, you know, sort of pop down quickly from the valley or the Portland areas for more localized tourists are frequently there on the weekends. And the idea of servicing those tourists to gin up that all that Newport has to offer to engage in sales is directly targeted towards the goals that staff in this instance on that page 27 has already said is tourist centered. They differentiated real estate in that approval a seashore from things like taxidermy or dentistry or other sorts of local services like them. So when you take all of this together, I think that staff, generally speaking, fairly outlined the issue. The one thing I would take from the staff's report that I would have you sort of dig a little deeper and question is this comment on page 2 of 2 that the commission should consider whether or not these activities, these extra entertainment activities are sufficient to establish the conditional use permit. And I would respectfully submit to the commission that targeting tourists to service them for their real estate needs is sufficient in and of itself. And those extra services and entertainment options only bolster the business model being reactive to the zone district's needs. They aren't a necessary precursor. They're just one that shows how serious this applicant is about working in tandem with the goals of the zone district. I thank you for your consideration.
Any questions for? All right, thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. You presently have an office up on Lee Street, I believe. And are we doing art gallery stuff and monthly activities for tourists and residents at that location?
Ty, are you available to speak directly to the commission member's question there?
How do you get your name and mailing address?
Ty Hildebrand, 3523 Burning Tree Drive South, Salem, Oregon, 97302. At the location we're currently at in Newport, we've done other events. We haven't done specific, had artists in to that location. At our Lincoln City office, we would have a rotating artist every month, and then we would have an event for them, like an open house and food and drinks and to showcase their stuff. And that was kind of the plan that we wanted to do in Nye Beach, was to offer not just real estate services, but to be part of this community. When we first, before we opened, we actually met the group of realtors that are working out of the Newport office in Nye Beach, and that's kind of where initially we wanted to start, but there was no place available, so we had to go where we're at now.
Second question I have is, being a real estate office, what are you particularly targeting sales in the Nye Beach area, or that you can't do today at the Lee address?
No, our draw to Nye Beach in the beginning was to be able to service tourists, because a lot of our sales come from people traveling in and seeing, grabbing a flyer and you know, eventually buying a house. So we wanted to be closer to that, and the agents, you know, were really the ones that wanted to be down there. They're, you know, Nye Beach is a great spot.
So so what percentage increase in listings and sales do you think you'll get in Nye Beach versus the present location?
That's a good question. We're definitely going to have a lot more traffic, because we don't have, we're very destinational where we're at right now. We don't have anybody walk by and come in the office. So, I think we would definitely see an increase. I don't know, I can put a number on that, but we would definitely have more opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Kyle or the attorney? Whose name I didn't get, so.
Zachary Dablo.
Okay.
Zachary Dablo.
Isn't parking going to be an issue? I mean, in the Nye Beach area along Coast Street, there's a, 2-hour limit? And there's a big parking lot that's owned by the brew house, but they're not going to be open for, you know, the regular. It's open for the customers of the I think it's called the tap house.
Right.
But parking's pretty much at a premium down there in Nye Beach.
So we have some parking behind the building, some dedicated spots, and then we would have the on street, you know, around the building.
You have the four condominiums upstairs where people live, and then I think there's four commercial units on the lower level.
There's one, and then one store has three.
Okay.
They've combined into three.
Any other questions for Kyle, the attorney? All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other proponents want to testify? Sure. Come on up, and you got to give your name and a mailing address.
Having me tonight, my name is Carolyn Ackerman. I own the other portion of the building that Ty is trying to open his business in. I have been in and around the building since about 2010. My first store was located at 314 Coast Street. I purchased the lower half of that building 2 years ago now. I sold Ty the unit back in March. Just to address a couple of your concerns with regards to parking. The parking lot is divided into two sections. There are four residential condominiums upstairs. In the rear parking lot, there is a total of, I believe, 8, if not 10 parking spaces that is strictly for upstairs. In the front portion of the parking lot, there is a total of at least 8, again, if not 10 parking spaces that are specifically for the use of the ground floor commercial units. Last year, we had a sign erected at the driveway of that stating that that parking lot was specifically for the use of that building. I own Petunia's Place, which takes up the three units, 310, 312, and 314. I have been there going on 4 years now. We are in part a fundraiser for homeless and abused animals, both locally and nationally. Something that I had tickled the idea with Ty was to do events that he and I would coordinate on, utilizing the rear parking lot where we could set up tents, have fundraisers, things like that. Over the time, I am familiar with Roland, who is at the Seashore Realty. It breaks my heart to say it, but I know that his wife has been very ill. I know that that office is not open every day. And I had also, Roland had shown me a couple of properties. I've been looking to buy a home for the last couple of years here. And Roland, he showed me two properties and he said, you know, my wife is too ill. I just don't have the time to take on any more clients. So the other gal that's down there, it's not even an office that she has. It's really just a window with some flyers in it, like a box window. And then behind that is a studio apartment. So she doesn't really even have an office down there. I think that Ty's idea and just the ideas that him and I could potentially come up with together, I think that it would provide an excellent, a little bit different sort of way of doing business down in Night Beach with, you know, the things that I think he and I could work on together.
Any questions?
Yeah. You own all four of those addresses, right?
I did, sir.
You sold one to Ty.
I sold 316 to Ty back in March of this year.
So the address that he bought, how long was that vacant before you sold it to him?
It was not vacant. There had been a tenant in there for approximately 5 years. I had offered the property to him, but due to some things that were said to him by some of the upstairs neighbors, unfortunately scared him away from the purchase of that property.
What was he using that property for?
It was a fine jewelry store, diamonds, sapphires, things like that. He's now relocated two blocks to the north. I guess that would be right next to the Newport Cafe, I want to say.
Yeah.
And by Sorello's. Yeah, I don't get out much. I'm in my store.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other proponents? Okay, any opponents? Sure, come ahead.
Well, I'm Roland. I'm glad I came tonight. I didn't know if I was going to. What I really wish was that my wife had come with me because she's been misrepresented, but she decided not to. And she has had some medical issues, but those are behind her now. I'm not really an opponent. I mean, I'm clearly in a conflict of interest position here because I own the other real estate brokerage that is in Nye Beach. So rather than presenting myself as an opponent, I'll break out of this binary model that we're stuck in too often and just correct the record a little bit. The first thing is, in regard to what the person on the video said, we're definitely open on Sundays. I think what he must have seen was we must have not corrected our hours on Google Business, because we try to keep up on that, but my only assumption is that he must have checked Google My Business, and we must be represented there as being closed on Sunday, which we're not. If anybody wants to verify that, I invite you to come down to Nye Beach on Sunday and drop into our office. We're open weekends. We're open 7 days a week. We made a huge effort, despite our small staff, to put in an automated system in our front room so that even if I was not there and I was the only one on staff for that day, we basically have put a garage door in in as the entrance to our office and created the whole front space as kind of a place for kids to come, for families to come. And I can open that garage door from anywhere on the planet. So even if I'm not there, the garage door is open, the front part of the office is open, and our phone number is posted and people can call me anytime. So I just want to correct the record that we are open 7 days a week, and I do invite anyone to come down there on Saturday or Sunday, especially if you're looking for a home, and we'll be happy to take care of you. The other thing is my wife's in perfect health now. She has had some medical challenges. Carolyn and I did have conversations about that. We haven't spoken in a while, so she's not aware, but I wish Erica had come with me. She could certainly represent herself quite well. So those are just the two corrections that I want to make, was that we definitely are open. My wife is fine. Our intention is to staff up more. And I do want to make one observation based on our 4 years in Nye Beach. The internet had transitioned from brick and mortar to the internet even before we opened our office there in 2018. And in 2018, when we opened it, I observed a lot of foot traffic, walk-ins coming in. Over the 4 years, that has diminished as people more and more know the houses they want to see, they know who they want to go to before they come to town, and they don't drop into a real estate office. And the phenomena of that happened, and I think anybody in real estate would agree with me on this, is just dissipating more and more each year as people go on the internet, they look at their homes, they look at the reviews for the realtors that are on the internet, and they decide the homes they want to see, the realtor they want to view those homes with. So I'm seeing less and less of foot traffic being a factor. And that's just a phenomenon that's not just our office. I think that's the real estate industry, generally, if my observation is correct. So I really meant to stay out of this since I'm in such a conflict of interest position, but I just wanted to be sure and correct the record in those two regards. So, and I know David, and I have nothing bad to say about him, so I will bow out at this point and proceed.
No, wait.
Wait a second. You get questions.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
Yeah. Huh?
Go ahead. Thank you for your comments. You know, they were hopeful and insightful. And I really didn't have a question. I thought I did, but, you know, after listening to you, I'm comfortable with your testimony.
Okay. Any other?
All right. Yep. Thank you. Any other opponents? Applicants now have a opportunity for rebuttal if they like to take it.
And Zachary has his hand raised again.
Okay, Zachary.
Sure. And before, I did not identify myself. Zachary Dablo. My address is 4450 Matthews Loop, South Salem, Oregon, 97302. I think hearing the last testimony struck me as something that we should be a touch mindful of, in that, you know, planning commissions are trying to achieve broad-based goals, not pick winners and losers in the market. I think as Americans that are capitalist-oriented and not into command and control economies, that's a pretty universally accepted principle that, you know, we don't want to unnecessarily protect one business or another from healthy competition that's going to have the exact effect of better serving the tourists and local permanent residents that want to visit Nye Beach. And the idea that two businesses can't service that same people in different ways according to their own sensibilities as to what they want to offer their customers. If the previous testimony person wants to do a remote garage, it's not our place to say one way or the other. But in terms of this application, there's very little differentiation to of saying that the business plan that's presented to this commission today is less designed to service tourists and entertainment opportunities for permanent residents than someone that is going to open a garage door. And I mean no disrespect in the slightest. That is his prerogative, absolutely. But what we're talking about is compared to that, what is this applicant doing, and is it serving the goals of the zone district? And I think you've got sufficient evidence in this record that those goals are consistent with the application that was previously approved with staff and consistently outlined in Mr. Hildebrandt's efforts to originally be in Nye Beach. Now, settling for being close because there was no available property should not be a penalty in this commission evaluating whether or not the specifics of the zone are satisfied. And I think if you compare this to the Seashore Realty Plan, you'll find that they are, and I thank you for consideration.
Okay, any questions? All right. All right, hearing none, we will close the hearing and begin our deliberations with Braulio.
It doesn't appear, I couldn't see any compelling reason to overturn the staff decision. It appears as though we have a tourist area designed for foot traffic. You've already got two other real estate offices. And so if we look at Ms. Engler, who's a very advocate, a strong advocate for preserving the tourist ambiance of Nye Beach, she's indicating that there's four offices and six retail businesses, and this would then be a fifth office. And I think the applicants, you know, they're good and decent people, no doubt about it. They have an office up on Lee Street, but I'm just not certain that they've really made a compelling argument for to be allowed to be in the C2 zoning. And so I'm sorry I'm not more articulate than that. I'm done.
Boy, this is a tough one. I can understand the. I agree that in looking for real estate, it's really all on the internet. The days where a agent finds some houses and shows you around, that really doesn't exist too much more. However, you know, being a tourist area, there is street traffic. And there's certainly a lot of street traffic. But I'm not having artist showings and other stuff. Talk's good, but proof in the pudding, you know, so it's kind of making a bet on the future of the thing. But I just don't really, overall, I don't see enough evidence to override the staff's initial decline of the request.
Well, I too have a lot of trouble with this. The idea of the tourist commercial district being put in place to direct the ambiance, as I think the term was used, or the nature of the neighborhood, certainly has a lot of value to the Nye Beach area. On the other hand, I can't get around the concept of fairness and the fact that a very similar application that never really mentioned any specific tourist services or resident entertainment was approved by staff. I don't think that came to the Planning Commission, but it was approved in 2018. And I see some compelling elements of the business plan we're looking at here as really going over and above to address that intent of the C2. And so I am inclined to vote to override.
Well, I concur.
Hmm?
I concur. I kind of agree with our other Planning Commission staff members on this issue.
You concur with which ones? Two against and one for. So tell me which way you're going.
I think, you know, as long as they're doing additional services with the art studio, I think the parking issues have been addressed. There's some additional opportunities for raising funds for charities. So I would think that I would agree to overturn the original verdict and vote for allowing the business to go into the office or go into the space.
I'll lead with a question for staff. So in my prior life, often in circumstances where there was a particular added or different type of activity, can it be mandated? So my question is, in this case, the applicant's providing, I think I saw at least once per month or maybe 12 over a 1 year period, not necessarily per month, special events, if indeed the commission recommended, as my last two colleagues suggested, overturning, could we mandate that as a condition that those events have to occur? Or is that something that's just from an enforcement standpoint too difficult, or is that something that's been done before?
Well, you can stipulate it as a condition because the applicant offered it and said this is part of our plan. And so you can hold them to what they're saying they will do. That said, in terms of enforcement, it would be difficult, and it would be responded to on a complaint basis.
Right.
I thought the testimony was that they were doing it in Lincoln City, but hadn't been doing it at the Lee Street location in Newport.
Yes. So I would suggest that, I mean, I also see the struggles of Nye Beach since the pandemic. I see businesses not open all the time, some pretty irregular hours, definitely a challenging environment to be successful as a retailer or a restaurateur in that area right now. Certainly hope that gets better. But then it becomes a question of vacancy versus something. And if that something had a condition, I tend to suggest that's the way to go here. So I would, you know, sort of recommend that we look at putting that condition of 12 special events per year on a decision, if indeed that's the direction the commission wishes to go.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
First off, it was a Planning Commission decision because I was here.
Oh, okay, I wasn't.
Because I remember Mr. Chapman making his presentation about how I was going to do that down there.
That was for the sign, I think. That, remember the TV, touchscreen TV?
Is that what it was for?
That's what it was for. I don't think that was the initial application. But either way.
Okay. I remember hearing about it. That's why I was like stuck in my mind. I remember talking about this. Okay, initially I was against this, for the reasons that are stated in the people that objected to it. It's a tourist commercial area. It's not really real estate. Personal service offices shouldn't be in there. That's the reason why we pulled them all out. On the other hand, the point you make about it being a difficult area down there, an empty storefront doesn't do you any good at all. Case in point is up at downtown area. Deco District, whatever you want to call it. To your point about requiring stuff, I have a jaundiced view of that because we approved a church at the bottom of Elks Club, and part of their conditional use was to paint lines on the parking lot. It still hasn't been done.
Right.
And that's 8 years ago or something. It's a long time.
I drive by it and I come to the same conclusion.
I always think about it. They actually did repaint them eventually, but it was 3-4 years later.
At least.
So I don't know. I'm two minds of this one. I kind of like your idea of requiring the condition, because if you're going to try to treat it as some sort of entertainment or something that could cause some traffic down there, but on the other hand, you're taking out a what could be a viable retail of some sort. So I don't know.
You're going to have to decide. You're pretty
cool. I know. I haven't called for the vote yet. So anybody have any, want to argue me one way or the other? Or?
Well, I mean, if the art that they have on display is going to be for sale, then you could almost classify it as a retail art gallery.
I will offer this again. I'm going to lean on my prior life, in this case in San Francisco. And we were already moving toward a road of hybrid uses as really complicating our approvals or disapprovals. Examples of cafes in banks, full service restaurants embedded in offices. I mean, this is the future of multiple uses necessary to make spaces financially viable. So in a way, this is almost moving in that direction. And that's why I'm tempted to say, can't we mandate some of this? Just because that's, in my mind, that's one of the tipping points for me. I think if there was not an offer of special events and community-focused and attention-grabbing events that will help increase foot traffic downtown, in Nye Beach, good for everyone in that area, that I'm less inclined than it's just a real estate office. And that's a different question.
It just seems that the primary focus is to have a real estate office, and the concept of the art or the music things that came in after the staff had already suggested that this was, it seemed to be ancillary to the primary purpose of selling real estate.
And my other point I want to make too is, you got to remember, we're not deciding on just the one. We're also giving directions to the staff for future decisions on this. So, you know, that's where I'm having a hard time with this. It makes a little bit better precedent if you've got some sort of conditions attached to it. But then we're back to the enforcement thing. Does it get enforced?
Well, I think you have to give people credit for good faith, that if we impose conditions, they're going to stick by them. We have conditions on all kinds of things that we approve. And I think as a general rule, Derek, you can probably comment, they do fulfill the conditions.
We have a poor record of enforcement.
Oh, we have a poor record of enforcement on the entire municipal code. But this is not a case of enforcement. This is a case of abiding by those conditions.
Right, but if you don't abide by them, to me, the main purpose of it is to be a real estate office. And there's just, Nye Beach does not have enough commercial activities for the visitors to go into art galleries or to, you know, I mean, it's getting thinner and thinner down there. So I would like to make sure that we preserve what the original intent was down there, that when way back when we did the overlays and we came up with the, I don't know if it was an ordinance or that ordinance which said that, specific uses down there. So in my mind, the question is, should we revoke that particular ordinance or try to live by it?
Well, there was the other suggestion about limiting the number. I mean, we limit the number of vacation rentals. No, we limit the distance between marijuana dispensaries.
Barely, but yes.
Well, we do, but I mean, you got to figure out the whole. So,
getting ready to say something, or
no? Somebody needs to make a motion one way or the other.
Okay, I move that we override the staff decision and approve the conditional use permit with the conditions as outlined in the prior discussion.
Do I have a second?
And I will second that motion.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion on the issue? All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Nay.
Nay. We're a hung jury.
So it fails?
Mm-hmm. It fails?
Yeah. Yeah, it fails on a tie vote.
All right. All right. On to the next one. File number 3-CUP.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I've got a staff decision. I think you do have the option of continuing it to see if you have a seventh member and can get a decision. I mean, that would be one approach. If the applicant is comfortable with that, we'll get our, we were just short one planning commissioner tonight.
Well, I'd be open to that.
Yeah, the applicant would be willing to proceed as you've outlined.
I'm sorry, Zachary, I couldn't quite hear you there.
I was saying that the applicant would be willing to proceed as you've outlined.
Okay. So maybe just set it over to the next commission meeting, regular scheduled commission meeting, which would be 2 weeks.
We don't need a motion for that. We just need to do it, right?
I would do a motion. That'd okay. be clean on the record. So set it over to the next regular meeting. Okay. And then Commission Member Hanselman hopefully will be here. We'll have an odd number and get to a decision.
Okay.
I make a motion that for file number 2-CUP-22 that we continue until...
Let me give you a date certain on that real quick just so you have it.
I think it's November 29th?
28th.
It would be the 28th.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Nay. Motion carries. Okay. Get a second chance.
Yeah. All right. Derek, can you then communicate with Jim and make sure he reviews the video?
Yes, yeah, so I'll have to review the information in the record, and I'll communicate to him that it was a 3-3 tie, and we need him to review this material so that he's ready. This is a continued hearing, so you will have an opportunity to take additional testimony on the 28th from anybody, including the applicant, should they wish to provide additional testimony.
Okay. Then we're on to file number 3-CUP-22, conditional use permit to do an interior remodel on an historic building, Ernest Block Home. Staff report.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. So yes, you have, you've seen a few of these over the years. These, you know, we have an extremely large number of historic structures in the city's historic structure inventory, but we do have a number of them, and this is one of them. It's the Ernest Block House, originally constructed in 1914. And so when you're dealing with a historic structure in the city of Newport, if somebody's looking to make changes to that structure that could impact its historical character, which includes essentially any kind of change to the exterior of the structure, then a conditional use permit is required. So you have a chance to evaluate it and confirm whether or not The changes that are proposed are consistent with the historic character and features of the building. So in this case, the Ernest Block home at 116 Northwest Gilbert Way was owned by composer Ernest Block and family for a number of years. Upon their passing, the church picked it up and has been using it as a lodge for a number of years, and are looking to make some changes to it, which include a couple of additions to the exterior. One would be the enclosure of a porch where some bathrooms will be built into that space, and then the addition of a bedroom at another corner. So you're looking at about 107 square feet in one location, 119 square feet at another. And the applicants provided fairly detailed construction drawings, elevation drawings, showing the nature of the changes. They're doing their, from what I can tell, their level best to match up with the existing appearance of the structure to the extent to which, I mean, you know, current market availability, you know, with windows and things of that nature, but similar style in terms of how the panes are set up, that, that kind of thing, matching the existing roof line and appearance. And so, you know, our recommendation on this, I think, would be for you to go ahead and approve the conditional use permit to authorize them to proceed with changes that they'd like to make to the structure. I think it's consistent with the approval criteria, which I've outlined in the staff report, which are pretty limited in this kind of case. You know, under 14.23030 and 14.23040 of the municipal code, excuse me, and then the history element of the city's comprehensive plan. So I think that I don't really have much more, I think, at this point in terms of a staff presentation, if you have any questions.
Any questions for Derek?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Proponents' testimony?
Please. I think that's his...
Good evening. My name is Steve Hunter. I'm executive pastor at First Baptist Church of Salem. My home address is 5068 Charleston Drive, Northeast or Southeast in Salem, Oregon, 97317. As my position in the church, I have oversight of our facilities, and so I'm directly involved in this process and this project that we're moving forward on. The majority of what we're going to be doing with, well, let me go back in the building. The building was built in 1914 by the Bush family out of Salem. And then sometime, and I'm not sure the exact date, in the 30s, it was purchased by Mr. Block. And the main house, what we call the lodge, has stood there. There's another building on there that was a garage and had some living quarters above it. Those have since been converted by the church into a dorm, two-story dorm facility. We use it for a lot of retreat, as a retreat center. We have both individual families and large and groups. It will accommodate, the dorm accommodates about 60. The lodge itself currently has 5 bedrooms and accommodates about, I think there's beds in there for 18. There's a variety of bunk beds and those kinds of things that allow that to happen. The challenge that we have with the configuration of the lodge is that the one wing that has the bedrooms, there are no private baths. And so if you're in the lodge and you have families or you're doing couples retreats or you're doing some of those kinds of things, it's a little bit challenging for people to feel a sense of privacy. And so we've created a design that would allow us to add one bedroom, but have each of the bedrooms with its own private bath. And then the reason for enclosing the porch area that's on the northeast, the northwest corner, is so that we can put some bathrooms there. There's a large room that we call the Great Room. It's a large meeting space. It's also an activity space, has ping pong tables, pool tables, those kinds of things for, you know, for everybody that's there to access. Those do not have, that area does not have any bathroom facilities. They would always move down into the bedroom area and use some of those bathroom facilities, or they would go up to the dorm room to be able to do that. So what we're trying to do is create space where, again, when we have, when we try and have more, and I don't want to use the term intimate in the wrong way, but when you have a small group there in which people, for instance, we have, we do trauma counseling with people there. We do grief counseling with people there. We have couples counseling that we do. And without that privacy of being able to get away to your bedroom, be able to spend time there as a couple or as an individual, it creates some challenges to that. And so we're trying to overcome those with this design. As was stated, we are adding the porch area, making those bathrooms, we're basically enclosing that area and that's on the northwest corner. On the northeast corner of the building, there's basically a cutout of that corner. We're going to enclose that in so that that helps us create that six bedroom with the bathroom that, and we'll end up with about the same number of beds in there that we currently have. That doesn't change at all. So we are committed to keeping the building in its classical design in every way possible. We are facing some challenges, as the director said, in terms of finding materials that still match some of the things that are there, but we're doing our best to do that. So I would take any questions.
Questions?
Yeah, I have one.
Okay.
In looking at the floor plan, I guess, looked like one of the new bathrooms that you're adding, looks like it's got a bathtub in it, other than just a, am I reading?
Yeah, so we have a number of families that use the, that will rent the space from us for a few days or a week at a time. Those families have small kids. And one of the bathrooms that we currently has a bathroom in it, and they, or has a bathtub in it, and they appreciate that for their small children. We can't put that in every room.
Right.
So what we did was we created a singular bathroom facility that had a bathtub in it that would be more of a public type place when those families needed that that accommodation.
Answers my question.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other proponents wish to testify? Any opponents? Oh, okay. Couldn't tell who was over there. Wanted to make sure. All right, and I assume you'll waive your right to rebuttal. So we'll close the hearing and start deliberations with John.
I had no problems with the proposal. It looks to me like they're being very sensitive, particularly on the exterior and the window issues. I can only imagine how complicated that that is, given lack of resources and material shortage issues. But I think it looked like a very responsible way to make some improvements.
Reviewing the plans, it looks like they pretty much stick to the character of the existing building, so I have no problems with it whatsoever.
I agree. I hope that when it's finally done, it won't be looking at the new section and the old section, that you sort of won't be able to tell. I'm sure there will be some, but I also really appreciate the kinds of services that you're talking about being available, because there's a huge need these days, and every little bit helps. So thank you for doing that. And I think it's a fine proposal.
I have no issues. The site plan and floor plans were very detailed, easy to follow. So I'm all for it. I agree with Bob. I provide a very valuable service, and I applaud you for doing what you guys are doing.
I concur with the comments of the other commissioners. Older homes need to be updated, and I think you folks are doing a great job. Good service. I'm in favor of your proposal.
I agree with the previous commissioners and looking for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on the issue? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Nay. Motion carries.
So I'll bring a final order and findings in 2 weeks to that effect for your approval and signature.
And then we have action items. Initiate legislative process to adopt a housing capacity analysis piece of the housing study.
Now, this is a follow-up to our work session. So this is an opportunity for you to, by motion, initiate the legislative process, and that's my marching orders to pull a little ordinance together and get this off to the state for the required 35-day notice. Your first hearing on this would be one of your January meetings.
I guess, Derek, my concern is the committee which is assisting Beth in drafting the document, you know, we're only halfway through the process, and are we putting the cart before the horse by setting up a legislative hearing already when we don't know what the final draft is going to be like?
Well, it's a little bit different in this case. You're talking about a two-part study. Part one is just the technical piece and the technical analysis, and the advisory committee's had a chance to pretty thoroughly vet that. And under state law and the terms of the grant, we have an obligation to move this forward. So, you know, that's helping to fund this. You know, provided it has been thoroughly vetted, and it has been, I think, from, you know, I think we've held the joint work session, we've held individual work sessions to cover components like the constructability assessment, and the advisory committee's had a chance to look at it five times through five meetings. I think the real meat of this is going to be the housing production strategy, which we don't have to adopt by ordinance and can be part of a resolution. But that's where we talk about, you know, what do we want to do to help facilitate the construction needed housing, considering this background information. But this in of itself, I think, is just, it's technical information. It draws from existing generally reliable sources. It's here to inform future policy discussions. It's the right time to move this forward, in my view.
Will it change from what we saw tonight?
Before it comes before you for a public hearing in January?
Yeah.
I think some of the information on how underwater are we right now will get rolled into the document where it was in slides right now. But most of this is all done at this point. I'd say it's like 90% complete, if you want to think of it that way at this point.
Well, weren't we still supposed to discuss, you know, recommendations and options?
That goes in the housing production strategy.
Yeah, it's phase two, yeah.
But I thought that was on the agenda for the next meeting.
Certainly the housing advisory committee's remaining meetings, they got at least four more meetings. It's all in the housing production strategy, which is not this document. It's all about, okay, this kind of tells us what we're dealing with now. How do we want to retool our policies to really help move the dial on housing? This doesn't bind us one bit with respect to any of the policies.
John?
Just following up on Bob's comment, because that was my concern, was the unmet need, quantifying that in some respect, since this is the technical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
It really ought to have a little more meat on that bone other than to say, yeah, there's a big unmet need.
Mm-hmm.
How big? So how much work do you expect? I mean, I assume the contract scope is limited here, so can only do
it
so
is.
Much, but what's your thinking as to what we might see in that slide or page.
Right. Well, it you know, I think, you know, what I would expect in terms of how underwater we are would be, okay, say, let's use rental market, for example. Here's what we are in terms of an existing, you know, vacancy rate. Here's what a healthy vacancy rate would be. This equates to a range of units between Y and Z.
Right. Good.
You know, that if we had them right now, we would likely have a healthier. That's the level of detail you get. You don't get a specific target. You get it's telling a story based on stats. It's telling a story based on historic growth rates. It's giving us information to say, okay, basically what this information will say is we don't really have a case to go ask for additional land, which we wouldn't be making anyway, because any additional land out there is less serviceable than what we already have in our urban growth boundary. And if you think those infrastructure costs are high on some of the green fields we have inside the UGB, they would be, you know, off the charts with it, the further you go out. So I think it sets the data story for us. And we'll get a little bit more in there, what we were just talking about in terms of how underwater we are. But it's pretty substantially complete at this point. You know, we're not going to be able to do a whole lot more there. But we have some pretty meaty conversations about housing policy, what we've done, what's been successful, what hasn't. That's all part of the housing production strategy.
Yeah.
But I think
you can even go back and pick up the projections from like the 80s and 90s when we were talking about what the growth was going to be, how many houses we needed. They never got built. I mean, we had numbers from back then that said how much we were going to need, and we didn't even get half of them. So.
It's tough. It's challenging. We do have success stories. We've had, 4 years now of multifamily construction like we haven't seen in many, many, many years. And some of that relates back to some specific policy changes we've made. There's some things we haven't had a chance to see how successful they are, but I suspect they will be, like the skinny street standards for low-volume streets and stuff like that, reducing, you know, how much somebody needs to put into infrastructure so they can do some infill development. You know, so, I mean, we've done a number of different things, partnerships with Proud Ground, partnerships with Habitat, you know, the multiple unit property tax exemption, the retooling of our system development charges to a price per square foot, which substantially reduced them for smaller structures. What do you know? We get a few more ADUs than we would have otherwise, accessory dwelling units. So we've done a number of things. Some things have been more successful than others. We'll have an opportunity to have a healthy conversation about that as part of the housing production strategy. It's just part two, and it'll come in the coming months, and you'll have a chance to meet in work session and hold public hearings on that too.
Well, I do think it's really important, though, if you're going to call this a capacity analysis and a needs study, mm-hmm. that it reflect the true needs, which is the backlog plus the projected growth.
I agree.
And so I think that part on the backlog really needs some beefing up.
Mm-hmm. I'll pass that on to Beth.
I think the comment about looking at the prior projections from the 80s and 90s is very well taken, because, you know, I attend the meeting, and my observation is that when the moderator comes up with a data point and she's challenged on it, she gets kind of defensive. And there are other people on the committee who are pretty well-versed, you know? So it might be interesting. And we all agree that we're underwater on the housing. So it'd be nice to just kind of compare what the last analysis was compared to what they're saying today. And again, this is off top because Derek's trying to get us to set up a hearing date.
No, but it goes to the report that we're going to approve, mm-hmm. you know, and anything we say here will get taken back to them and get incorporated. So mm-hmm. I'm more than happy to.
Yeah, we don't have, you know, when the hearing rolls around, if we don't think there's enough in there, we can just not adopt it and
right.
leave Derek hanging out to dry.
Well, that would be unfortunate.
No,
yeah.
No, I think we need to. Think carefully about that. I mean, if it's not adopted, it's your problem. You don't have to provide a favorable recommendation. It's a recommendation to council. You don't have to do that. And there's certainly additional work we can do. And then at some point it becomes a discussion with the contractor as to, you know, how much more money we got to try to put on the table. I don't like saying it's a state requirement, but it is in this case. This is, ties back to House Bill 2003. We are one of the communities that was obligated to adopt this.
By what date?
Well, we were supposed to have it done by the end of the year, but if we've initiated the legislative process, we're going to be okay. At the end of the day, it's what will the Department of Land Conservation and Development do in terms of enforcement if we don't follow through? But I don't really want to play around in that arena too much,
frankly.
Don't
want to get on your bad side to start with.
You know, and I don't want to put more into this than what it is. You know, it's a technical analysis. Every one of these projections in here is going to be wrong at the end of the day. They're projections. You know, it's a growth projection. We're not going to hit whatever numbers they put in here.
Hey, I was happy to make the 10,000 number that's been predicted for the last 30 years that Newport was supposed to grow to that number in the next 10 years, okay? And it's like, we finally got there.
I do think, I mean, we spent an inordinate amount of time at the last advisory committee meeting talking about how messed up Portland State University's, you know, estimate is. And it's minimized in the study as best we can without not referencing it, which is not an option for us because state law says we have to reference it. It's in statute that says we have. If we're to make any changes to our policies, it has to be done in consideration of PSU's estimates. That's what the statute says. And so, you know, it's in there. It's minimized. We're going to need more than 115 units in the next 20 years. Heck, a couple of years ago, we beat that in 1 year. So, but I think we have to keep it all in perspective. You know, Portland State University, for example, was given the responsibility for doing the estimates statewide because in the past, what you had were jurisdictions gaming it, making up estimates that weren't realistic to achieve certain policy objectives, causing a whole pile of litigation. And so this, the legislature said, stop. Or in cases, counties like Lincoln, for example, who didn't have the resources to do what was their statutory obligation, which was do population estimates at the time. It was delegated to the counties. Not all counties could do it. And so the legislature said, stop. We're going to have Portland State University do them all.
But then we end up with data that the community folks who are on the committee disagree with. So you're going to have bad data in, you're going to get a bad result down at the back end?
Well, we're not relying on the bad data. All we're doing is referencing that, yes, Portland State University said we'll need 115 units over the next 20 years. But all of our analysis is based on what we think is a more realistic projection, which is about 626, I think it was.
Yeah, and it really makes no difference. We can reference our data, and then we can put it in wherever we want because the only thing DLC details about if we start moving the UGB growth barrier.
That's what the state cares about.
That's what they care about. And
couple of meetings ago we were talking about, you know, something coming in top down. And this is a prime example. This analysis that the committee is going
through. Well, except I really think this analysis is useful. Mm-hmm. I think it's really useful.
You know, the demographics, those were kind of shocking, you know, because the thrust of the analysis, at least from this person's point of view, is that single-family housing and market-based housing is pretty limited, and this committee has talked more about affordable housing, which requires, you know, governmental assistance.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, like it's, you know, I got property I could put multifamily units on.
Uh-huh. But is it going to pencil?
Huh?
Is it going to pencil?
No, no. I have to feed it for 10 years before I break even. Mm-hmm. It's not going to do that.
Yep.
It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So.
Maybe Tina will send you a big check to build a big high rise.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I do want to emphasize, too, the ordinance that I'd be bringing forward, as I mentioned, is going to be pulling a number of specific implementation measures, many of which we've already implemented, out of our comprehensive plan. Because they're going to be replaced by this new housing production strategy, that doesn't land in the comprehensive plan. And that was intentional by the legislature. All jurisdictions now will be, all cities will be doing housing production strategies that are not in comprehensive plans because they're tired of not my backyard types, picking policies out of comp plans and tying things up in litigation for I don't know long until a project goes away. That was one of the principal reasons behind it. The other, they argued, is that housing production strategy that's not adopted into the comprehensive plan is more flexible and nimble, and you can adjust the policies as needed without having to go through a formal adoption process. So don't be alarmed when you see a bunch of implementation measures coming out of the comp plan. Okay. That's intentional, and they will be backfilled. We're just going to go with more generalized policies in the comp plan, and the specific implementation stuff's going to be in the production strategy.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, actually, because it's really hard to change the comp plan. I mean, that's a multi-step process to get through that. We've done it enough times. It's just like...
All right, I move we initiate the legislative process to adopt the housing capacity analysis study.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on the issue? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. One nay?
One nay.
Okay. Motion carries. Any new business, unfinished business, or director comments?
No, we're done.
All right.
Thank you for that, Derek.
Yep. Yep.